If you've opened a newspaper, been on social media, or turned on television, you've seen the images and heard the sounds flowing out of the detention centers near the border. Their children have been traumatically and inhumanely stripped from their parents' arms and care. More than 2,300 children have been placed in cages where they're not to be touched or consoled, and they're being shipped all across America with no plans or processes to reunite them with their parents. Meanwhile, the leaders of this administration have justified their actions with Bible verses that have been used to support other atrocities, like slavery and the Holocaust. They claim they are upholding the law, and that is supposed to make it okay. But the long and short of it is this: the United States of America is inflicting suffering on children and families, suffering they will have to deal with for the rest of their lives, suffering heaped upon suffering that caused them to flee and seek a better life in the first place. Though we've been naming these atrocities since the opening hymn this morning, we need to keep speaking what is on our hearts and minds as we are gathered for worship today. These past weeks, we've been talking about liberating the church, invoking the wisdom of liberation theology, and revisiting old words and concepts from our tradition, like spirit, salvation, worship, family, and kingdom. Today is our final week in the series, and today is the day we set aside many months ago to talk about liberating faith, setting free, reimagining faith. Since faith is something people with power are using to justify all kinds of violence, all kinds of trauma, all kinds of harm, we probably ought to spend a little time talking about what we mean by faith. Because this so-called faith is toxic, it's violent, and it's harming real people, and it's making a mockery of the gospel. With that as our backdrop, we turn to our lectionary text this morning, and we find ourselves in the book of Job. Earlier on in my faith journey, I basically avoided the book of Job. I mean, who wants to read about suffering, about someone who lost everything? And as the story goes, God let it happen as an experiment. That didn't fit my understanding of the world or my understanding of God, so I avoided it, more or less. My life was comfortable, and I wanted to keep it that way. But over time, I've come to have a profound love for this book, for the ways that it deals with the questions of faith, for the way it wrestles with suffering and oppression, for the ways God shows up, which is our lectionary passage for this morning. One of the basic questions the book asks is whether the universe is one of reward and punishment, and whether our faith depends upon that construction. Let's break it down just a little. In a universe of reward and punishment, you get what you deserve. If you do good things, you are rewarded. If you do bad things, you are punished. And God is the one who sets the universe, and God implements and enforces this justice. If you break the law, you are imprisoned. If you work hard, you gain riches. Simple and straightforward. If you are suffering, you must have done something to deserve the punishment. Cross the border and your children will be ripped from your arms. You brought this on yourselves. Over and over, this is the message that Job's friends tell him in their lengthy dialogue in the book. You have done something to deserve this suffering, Job. Repent. But before we write this off too quickly and challenge it with important questions of oppression and innocent suffering, we have to at least stop and admit there's something that we like about this ordering of the universe, this image of God. It lets us imagine that we are in control, that we can work to gain reward and security, and that we can avoid suffering. We can avoid our fears by doing the right thing. There's a sense of fairness in this construction of the universe that we want to cling to. Kate Bowler, in her book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved, I really love her title there because I think the honesty is brilliant. Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. She writes, fairness is one of the most compelling claims of the American dream, a vision of success propelled by hard work, determination, and maybe the occasional pair of bootstraps. Wherever I have lived in North America, I have been sold a story about an unlimited horizon and the personal characteristics that are required to waltz toward it. It's the language of entitlements. It's the careful math of deserving, meted out as painstakingly as my sister and I used to inventory and trade our Halloween candy. In this world, I get what I deserve. I earn my keep and keep my share. In a world of fair, nothing clung to can ever slip away. But the book of Job challenges this transactional understanding of the universe, this transactional understanding of God, this transactional understanding of faith. Job is a righteous man, and he loses everything, his possessions, his children, his wife, and his own health. Job is suffering in virtually every way we can imagine. And he's done nothing to deserve it. The cut and dry reward and punishment understanding of God and the universe crumbles in the face of innocent suffering. The truth of the matter is that innocent suffering is a profound reality. But we don't want it to be so. We fear this reality. We worry that we might find ourselves and those we love among those who suffer. So we selectively pick and choose which suffering is innocent. Or we turn our eyes from suffering because it's too hard to look at too closely. It is too hard to feel the pain of the suffering, the poor, the oppressed. Or we make up trite answers to try to salve the pain of those who suffer. Like, God won't give you more than you can handle. I should also say that I know that there are those among us who know suffering up close. Liberation theology makes a profoundly different claim than reward and punishment. The gospel of Jesus makes a profoundly different claim. God is not punishing those who suffer. God does not abandon the suffering. The claim, the faith, the experience of a liberated faith is that God is on the side of the oppressed, that God is with those who suffer, that if you want to find God, spend time with the poor, for God is with them. I also want to be clear, when liberation theology makes this claim, the poor and the oppressed are not some objectifiable groups of people without particular stories. They're human beings with names and faces and stories. They have wrinkles on their noses and people they love. Like Job, those who suffer do not do so in the abstract. They do so in fully human, enfleshed realities. And liberation theology claims that God is in their midst. In the book of Job, the formulas for faith fall apart. The easy answers have vanished. In their place, Job seeks God. Job laments to God. Job even curses God. Job seeks to put God on trial. Job tries to find God. And in the end, Job gets what few people in the entire biblical narrative do. Job encounters God directly. God shows up in the whirlwind and addresses Job face to face. As much as we might long for easy answers, Job doesn't walk away with any of them. In fact, God doesn't answer any of Job's questions directly. What Job sees instead is a God who intimately cares and is intimately engaged in all of creation, including the places where an ancient Near Eastern people would have been most afraid. Annabelle read the first portion of God's appearance in the whirlwind earlier in the service. And as God's speech continues on for four more chapters, we see how God knows every inch and crevice of the universe. It's tender, it's mysterious, it's challenging, it's beautiful. In the final chapter of God's speech, all of chapter 41 is dedicated to God's care of Leviathan. This is the sea creature that an ancient Near Eastern people feared the most. You see, the sea was a place of danger and chaos. The sea was a place of fear and terror. The sea was a place where people got lost and never came back. And within the sea resided this all-powerful beast, Leviathan. The fear of an ancient Near Eastern people was summed up in the image of this beast. And for 32 verses, we experience God's intimate care for this creature. This hardly explains Job's suffering. This doesn't offer direct answers to Job's questions. What we do encounter is a different image of God altogether. We encounter a different notion of faith altogether. God is with Job. God is with those who suffer. God knows in the fears and struggles of those who suffer. God knows exactly where it hurts the most in their bodies. God is on the side of the oppressed and the poor. And the gospel of Jesus says the same. At the very beginning of his ministry, Jesus opens up the scroll of Isaiah and reads, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." For those of us who have power and privilege and comfort now, we don't easily give up our understanding of faith as fairness, of getting what we deserve. But this leaves us with a hollowed out faith that is oppressive to others, whether we are fully conscious of that or not. When we encounter the poor, the oppressed, those who suffer, we see that our salvation is bound to one another. If we stay there long enough, we will find grief. Grief because we are finally seeing the suffering of the world, of children being ripped from their parents' arms, of the persecuted fleeing their homelands, trying to survive to find a better life, of how some of us have had a hand in creating the suffering in the first place. But if we get close and listen, if we can actually hear the song steal away, if we get close and listen, we will also find there is a vision for a different world, a vision for community and life together that will show us the way to God, the way to salvation, the way of.